Good evening, dear ones, and welcome to each of you. Your presences are blessings for all of us. Let us begin our evening in prayer in the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, God immanent, indwelling, the Holy Living Trinity, in whom we live and move and have our being. And so it is. Our Christ candle has been lit as the symbol of the light that is always with us and within us in the central being. So today we gather with intention to hear, to awaken, to die, to yield the self, allowing the birth of the new. We know that our shared intention and attention matters, that our work matters, not only for ourselves, one another, but for all of creation. And so as we are beginning our evening, once again, I was pondering this day and this time and what our work lineage has to teach us. And tomorrow is the feast, the grand feast of the Transfiguration, one of the most significant, and Father Thomas Keating says, there are at least 9 meanings to the Transfiguration and symbols that we can take into our being for our own formation. But tonight we take a glimpse into this ordinary feast through the lens of J.G. Bennett. And here's what he has to say about the Transfiguration. The key to understanding the Transfiguration is the transmission of divine love. If we can recognize that this was the mission undertaken by Jesus, we can see this event in its true perspective. The obstacle to this vision is our false conception of love as a polar force of attraction, similar to the attraction between two bodies carrying opposite electrical charges, or between the poles of a magnet. Attraction implies repulsion. So if the love between man and God were of such a character, it would imply that man and God stood at opposite poles and could never be united without losing their love for one another. But divine love does not derive its power from separation, but from union. It is not fullness, but emptiness. The Transfiguration was an action that embraced all worlds, the making of a new covenant of love. And the revelation was that the covenant requires from man liberation from egoism, which keeps him prisoner of the worlds of time and death. This was the very core of the mission of Jesus. Once it was accomplished, what subsequently happened was the process of opening the channel of divine love to the other disciples, and eventually to all who were capable of receiving it. May it be so that we too are released from the forces of egoism, emptying ourselves in order to be full of God. Amen. And so now we prepare ourselves consciously to enter into that place of stillness of being, a place of imminent trust and receptivity to the higher influences, the power that is emanating from the Spirit through the conscious circle of humanity and all worlds into our world, into our microcosm of being. This is not something we have to think about. We are simply to be aware and thus we prepare ourselves. With back upright and heart open, mind in directed attention, we breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that is hurt, everything that seems dark, harsh, shameful, maimed, ugly, irreparably damaged and diseased, unforgiving and unforgivable, wounded, resistant, apathetic, everything. And we hand it as an offering. We lift it, transubstantiate it in faith, in hope, in love. In inmost being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as infinitely loved, as light to the world. I do this on behalf of everyone and everything, and I breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I am, I wish, I can work. I hand over all the complexities of this day, all the plans for tomorrow, all the anxieties and small fears of my heart. I lay down my constructed life in order to yield to the divine human life. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. And we now enter into our time of Lectio Divina. And our reading will be shared three times with silence after each reading. My food is to do the will of the one who sent me and to finish his work, and thus be as ones who participate in the uploading and downloading of energies between the realms, cooperating with God in the maintenance of the cosmos, and so become conscious parts of creation, ones who live meritorious lives, perfect their souls, and serve the Creator, digested into infinitely greater wholeness, and thus nurtured and transformed to live as viaducts of those Christic fruits, higher order cosmic substances, peace, gentleness, love, patience, joy, kindness, forbearance, self-control, which then flow out from us into the physical world to make it more supple, more fully animate. A unified field of Christic love across the whole spectrum of the personal realms. My food is to do the will of the one who sent me and to finish his work, and thus be as ones who participate in the uploading and downloading of energies between the realms, cooperating with God in the maintenance of the cosmos, and so become conscious parts of creation, ones who live meritorious lives, perfect their souls, and serve the Creator, digested into infinitely greater wholeness, and thus nurtured and transformed to live as viaducts of those Christic fruits, higher order cosmic substances, peace, gentleness, love, patience, joy, kindness, forbearance, self-control, which then flow out from us into the physical world to make it more supple, more fully animate, a unified field of Christic love across the whole spectrum of the personal realms. My food is to do the will of the one who sent me and to finish his work, and thus be as ones who participate in the uploading and downloading of energies between the realms, cooperating with God in the maintenance of the cosmos, and so become conscious parts of creation, ones who live meritorious lives, perfect their souls, and serve the Creator, digested into infinitely greater wholeness, and thus nurtured and transformed to live as viaducts of those Christic fruits, higher order cosmic substances, peace, gentleness, love, patience, joy, kindness, forbearance, self-control, which then flow from us and out into the physical world to make it more supple, more fully animate, a unified field of Christic love across the entire spectrum of the personal realms. And so it is. I now invite you, as you are moved to do so, to share what you received from the image, the passage, the thoughts of your hearts that were evoked. Pamela, please, or Michael. You're, for some reason, I don't hear you, Michael.
How about now?
I definitely now. Welcome. I hope you're feeling better.
I am, thank you. That middle paragraph, I don't know if that's from Cynthia's book, but it could have been. And I've thought a lot about that, the feeding up and down the ray that we talked about a week or two ago. And when I was reading Cynthia's book, the thing that struck me is that it was really the radical invitation or the radical challenge that Jesus offered us in some of his teachings, that there are teachings like, you know, love your neighbor and love God, which are challenging enough, but also kind of at one level. And then there are teachings like love your enemy, pray for those who spitefully use you. and that is a whole other order of work. It is not only working with my own negative emotion about somebody or some event, but it is actually trying to consciously use my energy to combine with that thing and to transform it, not to change the other person, but to raise the whole system of them, me, my dislike up in consciousness, in energy. And, you know, that is part of the transfiguration of me and of the cosmos. Yes. and there was something else there. The other part slipped away.
Well, if it comes back.
I will re-raise that hand.
Very good. Yes. Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Yes, Rodney, please.
Hello, Marianne.
Hi, Rodney.
Hi. So I heard the part about higher substances. And last week, I recounted the story of Mr. Alspensky when his students asked him as he was on his deathbed, you know, what should we do? And he said, enjoy yourselves. And yeah, I really felt that that was, you know, something that came back to me to start actually putting into practice, to start really enjoying myself, which I really equate to loving myself. But the more I thought about it, he says, enjoy yourselves. So that actually equates to not only me enjoying myself, but actually enjoying yourselves. And it really kind of struck me that this is the same last commandment that Jesus said, to love each other as I have loved you. And so I've been practicing this week of really deep listening when I'm in front of someone, in particular, people that, you know, I have a relationship with that I know well, and really just seeing them without association, as if I just had met them for the first time, and really externally considering that in the moment, and just feeling the transformation of energy that causes in me, like joy and peace and love. So I like it benefits myself, but it benefits, you know, everyone else too. It's like the true meaning of namaste. Mm-hmm. You know, the Christ in me greets the Christ in you. So I want to continue that practice this week. And I don't know, it just feels like it's a good thing.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah. You're radiating that too as well, Rodney. Thank you.
Love you, Marianne. Yeah.
I still love you too. Yeah. Wonderful. Michael, it's returned.
Yeah, Michael returned and part of his memory returned. Yeah, so kind of the practicum of what I said is this polarized world that I find myself living in, that I am confronted with opportunities every day to fall into hate. And that is, you know, again, using that metaphor from Cynthia and the work, that is the lion eating the man.
Yes.
And on the one hand, you know, I can wish that things were just not so polar, damn it. And on the other hand, well, this is the Olympics of transformation. And, you know, what better opportunity do we have for the man to eat the lion on a good day and to be, because we don't have to look far to be offended by something, and to take that thing that arises and then to wrap that in love and have that be a sacrificial offering to God. What work?
Yes. Okay. Lightening the load. Thank you so much, Michael. Thank you. And Leslie, I see your hand up and I ask you to just maybe hold it for now and you can share a little bit later in our time together, because it is time to close this section of the evening. And thank you. Thank you very much to Rodney and to Michael, to everyone, for the thoughts of your hearts that are there. So now I'm very pleased on this special evening to introduce Peter, who will introduce and welcome our guest, Robin Bloor, for this evening's teaching. So Peter, please.
Thank you, Marianne. And thank you, everyone, for sharing so far. And it's a really awesome night to have Robin Bloor here. I count Robin as a friend in the work, and I'm delighted for this first encounter with Robin in our community, the 10th, the Journey School, and in our church. So really looking forward to what Robin has to teach us tonight. Just a little bit about Robin. You saw his bio, you know, his formal bio on the email that came out today. And I do encourage you to check out Robin's books. Robin is one of a few people living on this planet who are a part of a group that's articulating Gurdjieff's ideas and putting it in conversation with modern science. And he really is, I would say, one of the world's leading experts on Gurdjieff's Beelzebub's Tales, Gurdjieff's primary teaching. He's written three books that essentially are an aid to the reader. And I find them not only to be helpful in terms of understanding their tales, but also deeply edifying to my spiritual journey and application of work ideas. You know, for a lot of us, cosmology is that part of the teaching of the work, or the commentaries, those sections of the commentaries where a lot of us just kind of skip or read ahead, or turn the page. And for some good reason, you know, there's some archaic terms like the word hydrogen or the table of hydrogens or different influences. And, you know, so one of the things that will I think benefit tonight from Robin's teaching is how he upgrades these ancient ideas that Gurdjieff brought forward and puts them in contact with modern science. So I really feel this is an evening for work on the side of knowledge, especially when it comes to the side of cosmology of the work. And we need all the help we can get when it comes to this side of the work. And it so is important. The work is both psychology and cosmology, and it's very, very meaningful to have someone like Robin here. And just lastly, you know, Robin is a man who knows. And for those of you who know what that phrase means, it's saying a lot. Robin is a man who knows. I'm grateful to know Robin and benefit from his being. And just want to welcome you, Robin. And on behalf of the whole Journey School, thanks for being here and teaching and all your efforts. Welcome.
Thank you for that generous introduction. I'm going to share my screen, and you should be able to see a presentation come up. So does everybody see that? No?
No.
There it is.
Oh, there we go.
Okay. So we're good to go. So I'm not going to present it in the order of the title, The Food of Impressions and Influences. I'm going to present it in the opposite way. I'm going to talk first about influences and then move on to the food of impressions. And you'll hopefully see the logic of that. We begin with this idea. In right knowledge, the study of man must proceed on parallel lines with the study of the world. And the study of the world must run parallel with the study of man. And this isn't, you know, something pulled out of the atmosphere from nowhere. The fundamental idea of the work is that the inner world and the outer world reflect each other. And therefore it's necessary to study both, and that you will become lopsided if you just focus on one of these things. And the title of this presentation, which I was given, is really quite good because it divides between the activities of the outer world, or the influences of the outer world, and the the actual digestion of impressions, which belongs to the inner world. So this is the order. I call this a journey because we're just going on along a particular path, and it's the path that I kind of carved out when I thought about this topic. So we begin with an idea which is utterly fundamental to the work, which is your being attracts your life. And then I'm going to talk about the ray of creation. That gives me the opportunity to take us on a journey through World 96, World 48, World 24, and World 12. And then going to discuss the lateral octave from the sun, because that's where humanity enters into the equation. That allows me to talk about the fate of organic life. And there are two aspects to that. One is organic life as a transmitting station for the planets to the Earth. And the other is organic life as food for the moon. That allows me, from that point, to talk about bee influence and what that means, to talk about the triple octave. And that creates, if you like, a circle around the idea of the ray of creation, because from that point on, I can talk about the process of digestion, the higher functions that go with that, and the second conscious shock, which are all about the digestion of impressions. So, your being attracts your life. I remember encountering this idea for the first time. That was back in 1988, I think, sometime around then, and not understanding it at all. So I'm going to just explain it. Each of us have a general set of expectations of the future based on a personal worldview of how things happen. Our personal worldview of how things happen is wrong. It's almost certainly wrong because we don't see everything. So we don't really know how things happen, but we have expectations based on that. But in the work, the general principle is that your being attracts your life. So what happens to you is it's what you attracted, basically. In case there should be any doubt, the events of your life occur to you because of what you are. Now, you could think of this simplistically and say, for example, well, people who enjoy strife become involved in strife. And that would be simplistic. But not realistic. It is far, far more precise than that. Your inner world determines your life exactly. And we could go as far as saying that as far as our personal evolution is concerned, the external events of our life don't matter much. It's how we meet them that matters, and how we digest them, let's say, that matters. What occurs to us is coming anyway. And there's nothing we can do about that because we attract it. So I'm going to start at the ray of creation, which is, if you like, the beginning of the work. We have this idea that an octave extends from the absolute as his endlessness and the absolute as a holy firm. So the absolute is the most dense and compressed points of existence that actually exist in the center of planets and moons and suns. And the absolute is completely dispersed across the universe, which are in theory the same thing. So what I've illustrated here is seven different densities of atoms, which come straight out of Peter Uspensky's In Search of the Miraculous. And a list here, which I'm not going to explain as to the number of laws that apply at that level. But some of this will start to become, if you like, slightly clear. Only an atom of the absolute is truly indivisible. All those other atoms actually can be fragmented because they can ascend or descend. They can become more dense or less dense. The laws that apply, some of them are just, in a sense, quite obvious because they apply to the density. So we can look, if you like, at the four lower substances. We've got them labelled here as moon, earth, all planets and suns, or re, mi, fa, sol. And they correspond with the ancient Greek classification of elements of earth, water, air and fire. So we are directly influenced by those four levels. That's our span as living things. We can be influenced by the moon or the earth or the planets or the sun. Nothing from above the sun is achievable for us, at least not in our daily activity. It might be achievable for us in eternity, let's say. So what I wanted to do, because some people find the ray of creation difficult, I wanted to actually just couch it in terms of a Lord's Prayer, because one of the things about the ray of creation and the Lord's Prayer is that they're the same thing. They're exactly the same thing, but expressed in completely different ways. So, you know, Our Father who art in heaven, actually you can also do this internally or externally. So you can think Our Father who art in heaven as the absolute, or you can think of Our Father who art in heaven as the highest point in you, which would be the higher intellectual center. So the outside reflects the inside, even in this. The interval is filled by hallowed be thy name. And if you look at the Lord's Prayer, there's been so many studies done on the Lord's Prayer, and yet there always seems to be something new to say about it, in my opinion. A lot of the expression of the Lord's Prayer I view as just attitude. That is, I have the attitude that Our Father is in heaven, or pervades something that we could think of as heaven. I have the attitude that his name should be hallowed. I have the attitude that his kingdom should prevail in whatever sense that is possible. I have the attitude that his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And that is an appeal that his will would be done within me. If I have this attitude, then it belongs to me. It becomes my responsibility in a way. Give us this day our daily bread is an attitude associated with the expectation that if we open ourselves, it will be provided unto us. And forgive us our trespasses. I apologize to those who are not used to this wording. It's just the wording I was brought up with. Forgive us our trespasses. But this is the point in the octave where the interval arises. And there isn't any possibility that our trespasses will be forgiven unless we forgive those that trespass against us. That's how the force passes to the earth. Lead us not into temptation, because that the earth is the field of temptation. All of the lower capabilities of every individual take place at that level. And at the level of the moon, deliver us from evil. Which is really, it's to deliver us from the external influence of the moon itself. And finally, we complete the circle. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. So I can take these positions in the Lord's Prayer and apply them to the ray of creation. So deliver us from evil. The level of the moon is based upon crystalline substances or solid substances under 96 orders of laws, particularly the law of accident. This means You know, if something is solid, it has lesser, it's fewer degrees of freedom. So without trying to enumerate the 96 laws, there are ways to get at that, but now is not the time to discuss them. We can understand that this is a very dense level. This is the hell of our world, although it's also the growing point of the ray of creation. And this is essentially, to a certain extent, something that we have to really take care to understand. It's the growing point of the ray of creation. We need, we want, we hope to make that part of us ascend. Psychologically, it's a level of what Maurice Nicol and Uspensky called false personality, our false idea of ourselves. The devil is the moon's representative on Earth. That's because the devil's concern is that the moon should be fed. And in the work, I encountered this idea in the late 80s as well, creating moon in oneself, and I had to talk to a lot of people for a fair amount of time to get an understanding of it. But the moon in oneself is sensation. And the way to combat the direct influence of World 96 on my body is to be able to sense my body. And if I direct energy into the sensing of my body, that energy doesn't go to the moon, it goes to my moon. So we climb up one level and we talk about lead us not into temptation. The level of the earth is based on liquid substances. You only have to look at this planet and to realize that it's primarily a liquid planet, under fewer orders of laws, because liquids are under fewer laws than solid. You know, and I'm being very simplistic here, because I could take this much further. The specific influences at this level include identification, the law of accident, the law of cause and effect. This is the level of as ye sow, so shall ye reap. That is, the law of accident takes place. The law of accident takes place because this is a mechanical world. And if, for whatever reason, you happen to be in a certain place at a certain time and you're incapable of anything but mechanical behavior, then whatever happens to you is actually accident because you have no control over it. And that's the meaning of the law of accident. It means that in some way or other, I am not in any way in control of my life, so my being is attracting anything that's around. This is the level of the confusion of tongues. On this level, people do not and cannot understand one another. And there are reasons for that, again, but which have to do with the energies that pertain to this world, because the ability to understand another person is, well, it involves external consideration. You have to, in order to properly communicate with someone, you have to put yourself in their shoes and speak to the person that you represent as standing in their shoes. So, World 48, that's not really a possibility. And this represents the normal level on which human life functions. And we shouldn't despise that, we should just acknowledge it. That's the way that it is for most people. Psychologically, it's the level of a normal personality. So the influence of World 24, the influence of the planet, forgive us our trespasses, but only as we forgive those who trespass against us. The levels of the planet is based on air. Air has greater degrees of freedom than water, and therefore is under fewer orders of laws. This is the level of essence. This is where we were born from. The particle of us that was attracted to a conception had fate. And if we had managed in one way or another to grow our essence considerably, then we would be under the law of fate. This can properly be understood in the way that the Hindus talk about karma, in that in one way or another, there is a struggle with your fate, in the sense that the fate itself is not determined. However, the fate is something that you volunteered to experience. So if it doesn't create struggle in you, then there's something, well, something's going wrong. The reason I prefer the term trespass to debt, otherwise I'd have changed it, is simply because it seems to express to me what happens with trespassing, is that I behave in a particular way which impinges on something, someone else, in involving a level of kind of inconsiderateness. And I'll be grateful if they forgive me, but I shouldn't expect that unless I forgive those who impinge on me in the same way, or even worse. This is a level of struggle, the level of World 24. This is a level at which the energy is created for self-remembering. Give us this day our daily bread. We've now come to a very high level, the level of the sun. This is based on fire. We would understand that in terms of the scientific world as plasma. The sun's an electrical phenomenon. It's under merely 12 orders of laws, but there is structure in plasma, which is something that only just science has only just started to realize, to be honest. And this is a level of reason or of higher mind. On this level, we are dependent on help from above. This level only functions if we can make connections to the higher level. Impartiality in the intellectual side and conscience in the emotional side belong to this level. It's also the natural level of archangels and prophets. You could therefore, if you like, think of it as the level of sea influence. So now, having said that, I'm now kind of homing in on the, if you like, the position of mankind in all of this. Mankind doesn't have a position in the ray of creation. He's required only because of a side effect of the ray of creation. The ray of creation cannot progress past the note far because there's an interval. And the solution to that it wasn't anything that we did. The solution of that was created at the level of the sun. So this is an extremely high level in terms of its, let's say, holiness. You'd say that Christ is at the level of the sun and above. And that level sounded a note and created an octave to fill the interval. So this is what happened on the diagram. Organic life was created. It fills the interval between the planets and the Earth. And that's created in a side octave, where just an incidental octave is the position of man. So organic life on Earth fills the interval between the planets and the Earth, and it allows the influence of the planets to reach Earth. And I mean, this isn't a fine theory. This is actually observable. But organic life on Earth also plays a role in respect to the growth of the moon. It creates substances that feed the moon, helping to create its atmosphere. So we need to understand this. If we're going to understand the position of man, then we need to understand his position in the ray of creation. What we have on the right side here is the ray of creation, but I've drawn in the impact of the law of the three as the ray of creation descends from the absolute through to the moon. And we are not concerned with anything that's happening high up there in the Sol, La, Si, Do area. That's beyond our pay grade. But we are interested in two specific triads here. In the first triad, organic life carries the neutralizing force, enabling substances of the planet to blend with substances of the Earth. The planets are active, the Earth is passive. and organic life is a neutralizing force. In the second triad, the earth is neutralizing. Organic life is passive and the moon is active. And this triad enables substances of organic life to blend with substances of the moon. It feeds the moon. This isn't a theory or an allegory. This is a direct. So we talk about the transmitting station. So this is the first of those two triads. So we have the situation here that planets combine with Earth and organic life is the neutralizing factor in that implementation of the law of three. That means it's a transmitting station for the influence of the planets. When we're talking about organic life, we're really talking about everything from one brain beings through two to three brain beings. Not just humanity, it's the whole of the animal kingdom in every form that it exists. And it's a transmitting station, and you can kind of see this at the lowest level. For instance, if you actually look and see what's underground, if it's not igneous rock, which is the stuff of volcanoes, then you have various limestone. That's bone. All the limestone under the ground is bone. You have oil. That's organic material. It came from living things. You have coal. That's organic material. It came from living things. You have sandstone. The sandstone was created from seashells. It took a long time, but you know, that's organic life. In the very slow progress of the planets and their influence on the Earth, they're creating the skin of the Earth through the action of organic life. But at a higher level, we are the transmitting stations for higher hydrogen. So we would say knowledge and even feeling for the planet Earth is coming through us. A substance of the planets mixes with a substance of the Earth in a way that is mediated by organic life. I can tell you what the substance of the planets is. It's electromagnetic radiation and magnetism. And electromagnetic radiation and magnetism has an impact on all human life. It affects, I can't go into the details, but it certainly affects in a scientific way. It affects the way that a body works. The endocrine system responds to organic to planetary influence. And the results is a substance, which will include knowledge perhaps, serves the Earth, that's come from the planets, and we have been the factor that brought it into the Earth. We are carriers of neutralizing force, unchanged by the action of the planets. That is, it's happening to us, but it's not making any difference to our lives. We don't understand this influence, but it's not making any difference. There's a story that I think explains this very well, but in kind of an amusing way, that was just a couple of paragraphs in one of Kurt Vonnegut's books. He said that two particles of yeast were discussing the meaning of life. And they discussed all sorts of ideas from yeast philosophy and the various theories of yeast science and all the particular practices of yeast religion. But they never managed to work out that the meaning of their life was that they were making champagne. And this is precisely it. This is what's happening to human beings. We're making champagne for the Earth. So, but we've also got this disturbing thing, which is food for the moon. And this is where the moon and organic life combine. The Earth is a mitigating factor. It's actually the transmitting station again. The Earth is a transmitting station. Some substances of organic life mix with some substances of the moon. Earth is neutralizing point. The result is that the moon is fed. Humanity can be active or passive in this. Most likely the moon feeds on hydrogen 96. That's the energy of the immune system and also the energy of false personality. And of hydrogen 48, which is the energy of personality. In other words, when you die, those parts of you go to the moon. Evidence suggests that Gurdjieff calls it rasguana, but it's a splitting of part occurs when at death, and part of you, which is the essence, has a different destiny. And part of you, which was a physical body, that's everything below hydrogen 96, just returns to dust. But the piece in between, the personality and false personality, goes to feed the moon. Sounds like someone just made that up. But actually, this is how it works. That part of you is, first of all, it's volatile, and it would rise simply under the force of gravity anyway, but it's also electrically charged, negatively charged. It rises to the higher atmosphere. The magnetosphere of the Earth stretches out away from the Sun, and for 6 days during the orbit of the Moon around the Earth, 6 days out of, I don't know, 28 or so, the moon passes through the magnetosphere of the Earth, and that's when that energy is transferred to the moon. That's how it happens. That's the mechanism. Okay, enough of that. Let's talk about B influence. C influence is right. It means contact with a conscious man or a prophet or archangel or holy messenger. B influence is actually quite common, but of course there are gradations. So, a church, a painting, a sculpture, a preacher, a book, a fairy tale, Shakespeare play, Game of Snakes and Ladders, a conversation. All of these can be B influence. I remember I had a hobby, it was a bit of a strange hobby, I suppose, for most people it would be strange. When I used to live in the UK, I used to go and look at cathedrals. And I noticed that most of the cathedrals that existed in the UK, they're all kind of 600 or 700 years old or even older. That somebody had re-architected them at some point and changed them. And I had an experience in a cathedral, Ely Cathedral in the Isle of Ely in the UK, where I walked into the cathedral and I felt about 6 inches tall. I felt so small I couldn't believe it. And that was a cathedral that had never been changed. Nobody had sought to, you know, add a little bit here or knock a bit off there. No, nobody had done that at the Isle of Ely. It was an extraordinary experience. And that's straight B influence. Somebody from 800 years ago built a cathedral, and then, you know, I walk into it and they gave me a message from all that time, you know. Be influence, miraculous, can be. But note that be influence always arrives as impressions. It's always impressions. It is not a direct interaction with something higher, it's an indirect interaction. That's what's being said. Now we need to talk about the triple octave, and again, this is something I could talk a whole hour about this, but we don't have that time. You notice that the structure of the octave is what created the universe. You could say it's a simple mathematical structure, if you like, but it is what created the universe. And this is just one example which, if you like, illustrates it, but if you take the vibration at the level of Ray and the violation at the level of me, that increase, and you compare it at the difference between that and the increase between me and the Sun, you realize that between the Earth and the Sun, there is a doubling of vibrations compared to the difference between the Moon and the Earth. And between the Sun and the Absolute, there is again a doubling. And when you have this kind of doubling occurs, you can put octaves in. So we can put in three octaves that stretch from the Absolute to the Moon. And this is, this is just hugely important. So those octaves, the C-Do interval is filled by, and at the top, by the will of the Absolute, but At the sun and the earth, it's filled by the influence of the sun on the vibrations passing through it from higher, and the same with the earth. So the only thing that's left are three intervals, and those are the three intervals through which the Magala, the whole of the universe, feeds. It feeds with the interval of, at the bottom is filled by food, the interval in the middle by breath, and the interval at the top by impressions. Right? And that's the scheme of living things. It begins with the scheme of the living thing of the universe. So, if you think of the ray of creation in this way, it raises the image of, I don't know if you're, any of you are familiar with, the idea of Adam Kadmon in the Kabbalistic tradition. But Adam Kadmon was called the first Adam because he was the first creation of the Absolute and he was a living thing. But he is the universe. And the Islamic tradition has the idea of Adam Rouhani, a different name but the same thing. His body is the universe. We do not know, we do not understand that living thing. It's beyond our ability to perceive. So we don't know what those impressions, breath and food actually are at that level, but we know what they are at our level. And if we think of our personal ray of creation, and this is what we are in terms of three octaves, we're the same, we're built to the same pattern. In fact, Gurdjieff said that man, microbe, and cosmos, Magala cosmos, all built to the same scheme. And this may not be obvious, but this links directly to the food light diagram, which is convenient because I now need to talk about impressions. Again, this is one of those diagrams in Search for Miraculous that most people avoided trying to understand, but actually, this is actually quite possible to understand if you put in the effort. One of the things that's interesting about food is that it's deconstructed when we take it in. So if we take in food through the mouth, dough 768, the proteins are reduced to polypeptides and amino acids, and then eventually to all to amino acids. The carbohydrates are reduced to disaccharides and then monosaccharides and so on. The consumption of food involves deconstruction, and the same is true of air. The oxygen that we breathe is not the oxygen that circulates in the body. Apart from anything else, the oxygen we breathe would be described as a molecule of oxygen, O2, and it circulates in the body. It's an ionic form of one atom of oxygen on a red blood cell, oxyhemoglobin. And eventually that becomes ATP within human cells. So the air is deconstructed as we take it in. And the same is true of impressions, right? Impressions need to be deconstructed. And the problem is, of course, and we all know this, that there isn't any natural mechanical way that that happens. So in the diagram here, we've shown impressions giving a shock to the air octave at Mi 48 and advancing to Ray 24, but they couldn't advance unless there was some hydrogen 12 to make them advance. It couldn't happen because the law of three requires that. It's not automatic. So we need to bring hydrogen 12 to the point of entry of impressions, which is actually the intellectual center, the lowest part of the intellectual center. And this is called self-remembering. So we've got this position now, and I could, by the way, I'm not going to, but I could describe what all of these various notes actually are. We end up, because dough 48, because this can evolve to Ray 24 and hence will evolve to Me 12 as long as there's some hydrogen 6 around, right? Because that can happen. We end up with three different levels of hydrogen 12 here. This second octave of air will proceed as far as Sol. But you see, Mi has hit an interval, Do, Re, Mi is an interval, Mi farther, and Si hits an interval before Do. So these two cannot go any further, but Sol can. And it kind of has to. It's an odd thing. The actions that bring hydrogen 12 to the right place. This is kind of an odd thing to say because we don't think of them in these terms, right? We don't think of self-remembering and self-observation and non-identification, external considering, as mechanisms to move a substance to a different place in our body. But that's what they are. There isn't any difference between the two ideas, if you like. That's what they are. This is how we digest impressions. So we get C12. That's used for reproduction. Very good. The human race can continue. Me12 is impartiality. This kind of impartiality associated with pondering, but it will go no further unless something else happens. And Sol12 is the energy of the higher emotional center, through which conscience can manifest. And some Sol 12 automatically rises to become Law 6, the energy of your higher intellectual center. And this is organic, it has to happen. In other words, the theory is that we are born with a higher intellectual center and a higher emotional center. Higher intellectual center feeds on hydrogen 6. If there wasn't something that automatically created some of that, we would die. The higher intellectual center would break away, and we would die. We wouldn't be human beings anymore. So there's a mechanism to make that happen, but there's no mechanism to make Me12 and C12 go any further. And this is, if you like, this is almost the most surprising thing. And it's very difficult, it's a very difficult area of discussion unless you have some kind of experience that in some way or other gives you a hint, an exposure to what this is. So we have that picture, which is a picture I showed before. And we also have the fact that when we encounter the work for the first time, assuming that we've encountered people who are genuinely interested in the work, we're told that we are not to express negative emotions, right? But in actual fact, that isn't something we can do. What you can do is you can avoid contaminating other people with negative emotions. So somebody can get angry with you, let's say. Now, you could get angry back. You could, in one way or another, continue the kind of line of strife, or you can just turn around and walk away. But you will express the negative emotion because it's going to have to come out. And actually, it wouldn't be very healthy if it didn't come out. It's going to have to come out, but it doesn't have to come out and infect someone else. And the thing that happens with the non-expression of negative emotions is that you learn to have mechanisms that do not react with negative emotions to various things. A negative emotion is effectively a denial. It's effectively, I am, in one way or another, denying something. I want to push it away. But it's possible. And this is a technique that I know that I was taught in the world, in the work a long time ago, is that it's possible to actually create a space So something happens and you create a mechanism that just pushes itself in between you and your negative reaction. And this is the non-expression of negative emotion. This is a preparation for the second conscious shock. And the second conscious shock is the transformation of negative emotions into positive emotions. It does not happen of itself. It does not happen even from outside the machine. It happens internally. It happens at Soul 12. Something occurs and negative emotion rises up within me. Right? And that can go all the way. It can be very strong, so it can go all the way to hydrogen 12. And at Soul 12, we enter into a position of transformation. And what was internal negative emotion is transformed into positive emotion on the spot, there and then. Right? And that delivers a shock to Me12 and C12. That makes these two particular substances go further. And so Me12 becomes FAR6 and C12 becomes DO6. And that's the end of the possibilities of man. That's the end of the possibilities of impressions within the cosmos of man, as far as I understand it. So, okay, how long have we got? We've got about 15 minutes or so. 10, 15 minutes for questions, if anybody has any questions. I'll even stop sharing. Okay, so Jim.
Hey, Robin, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I'm fascinated by those diagrams. I think people either love them or hate them. And I'm probably one of those who finds them just full of treasures that I don't yet understand. What I was particularly interested in, though, was we talk quite a bit in our church and in the school about the first conscious shock, the transformation of impressions as they're coming in. I'm having trouble remembering hearing much discussion about the second conscious shock. Is there a way you can simplistically separate those two, or is it totally unrelated and would really be a side trip that isn't appropriate at this point? I just know that we use that term so much, people tend to think they know what it means. And I'm seeing some very useful distinctions and clarifications in your definitions. And I would love to hear a little bit more about the first shock.
I mean, the reason that the second conscious shock is very rarely discussed is that if you don't have experience of it, you've got almost nothing to say. So the certain things have happened to me where I saw what this was. But one of the things that was interesting was my teacher, Rena Hans, who was taught by Gurdjieff. So she had she was an extraordinary person. She used to, and this is why, by the way, if you hear stories about people in the work, and somebody's accusing them of behaving very badly, you shouldn't believe any of it, because you really can't know why someone at a higher level behaves the way they do. But my teacher used to organize situations where there would be a lot of negative emotions, particularly around herself. She used to surround herself with annoying people. And she was doing this because she was feeding off them. And I, at a certain point in time, I eventually realized what she was doing. You'd hear some piece of gossip or other about Rina did this and Rina did that. And actually, no, Rina wasn't doing anything that they thought she was doing. Rina was transforming negative emotion. That's what she was doing. And people at a very high level can do this, but at our level, it's probably not worth talking about too much, simply because self-remembering is already a challenge. You know, and this, it is about the non-expression of negative emotions. It is about, if you aren't already self-remembering, you can't do this. You know, you have to already be in that state. There are times that I've been in that state that lasted a long time. When I say a long time, more than a fraction of a second, but mostly it's just that. So it would not happen under normal circumstances. And for that reason, we do not normally discuss it much. But I think that people should know about it. You see, it's my belief. It's my understanding that the crucifixion of Christ is a demonstration of the second conscious shock. That's what it is. Everything denied him. Every kind of negativity was pushed on him, even to the point where he thought his father had forsaken him, and he demonstrated what you do with that. That's my understanding. I might be wrong, of course. Does that help?
It's something more to ponder. I can't say I'm fully understanding it, but I love that idea of using the crucifixion as an example. That does help.
Okay, can I go on to Mike?
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Great. Thank you so much. This is an amazing presentation. I can't say I begin to understand it all, but I look forward to watching it over and over again. I'm curious. You're a man that's clearly, you've become an industry leader. You've dedicated much of your life toward shaping the arc of humanity, if you will. And I wonder, and I'm a complete rookie on this cosmology all this business, but I have this nagging question about how, like the work that you've done, how does that feed into this notion of feeding the moon, and this notion that there's a certain homeostasis of pain and anguish in the cosmos that won't go away. It's just going to stay the same no matter what we do. I wonder if you could speak to that.
Well, I can speak to some of this. It was, if you like, it's difficult to put yourself in the position of the absolute, right? But if I, if my reading of Beelzebub's tales is correct, my reading of Gurdjieff's correct, then the absolute himself made a terrible sacrifice in order that the universe should exist. And that sacrifice created what Gurdjieff describes in the tales as a tug-of-water ego crap, which is octaves and octaves within octaves and octaves within octaves and octaves within octaves. And that creates the whole of the universe right down to the particles within the atoms. And it's all created by octaves and the law of three. And that has a consequence. It means that if something moves up, then something must move down. There has to be a balance, because if there wasn't a balance, things would start to pile up in a certain place, right? It has to keep moving. So it keeps moving, but the theory that Gurdjieff puts forward is that God agreed to suffer, right? That God agreed not just that this should happen, but that he should be able to experience it at every possible level. So, you know, the suffering, the idea that Christ suffered and the idea that we suffer, it may be that, you know, at the end of the day, God himself suffers in ways that we can't even imagine. I don't know whether that helps, but it
brings tears to my eyes. Thank you.
Okay. So, Brett.
Yeah, thank you very much. I, like Mike and everybody else on this call, am absolutely fascinated by the in-depth teaching that you provided, and the diagrams were fantastic to see more of the interconnectedness. Thank you very much for the sharing. I just had a quick, obviously stupid question, yeah, uneducated, for clarification. What I understand is, you know, nothing is ever lost. Everything transforms, you know, atoms go to the moon and to the cosmos and everything else like that. When we talk about feeding the moon, is it after a human being passes, or do we still feed the moon or sun while living? Sorry again for the very uneducated question.
Well, it's not, I mean, first of all, there are no stupid questions in this. It's like, it's better, you know, if you have a question and you think it's stupid, it's way better to ask it than not to ask it, but it's not a stupid question. The situation with mankind is this, that if mankind was more developed, if mankind made in, by let's say percentage of people, I suppose, made greater efforts to raise themselves, then that effort would provide material that would go to the moon while they were alive. The problem with mankind at the moment is that there's so few people making that effort that in actual fact the moon feeds on death. It doesn't have to be entirely that way. And it feeds, by the way, on the death of all animals as well. It's not just that those hydrogen 48 and hydrogen 96, those particular substances are part of the psyche of animals, even worms, you know, that level of animal. It's all, and so the moon feeds on all of that, you know. Now, there's nothing that the worms or the animals could do to make any difference, but there's something that we could do to make a difference. So it's a good question.
Thank you.
Robin, could you speak about the role of sensation in feeding the moon? You briefly touched upon that.
Yeah, well, when I was first introduced to the work, I was taught to do a preparation in the morning, which is about 20 minutes spent sensing your whole body. Now, there is a parallel between the role of the moon in the cosmos, the role of the moon, particularly in the solar system, and the role of sensation in the human body, right? If, you know, so the idea, I mean, I was taught this idea, and it took me 2 years to get my head around just that someone had even said it, right? When I joined Rina Hans's group in the first instance, they said to me, as though I would understand it immediately, you need to create moon in yourself. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. And they said, well, you had better find out. Being, you know, as helpful as she is. Well, actually, Gurdjieff at one point in time turned around and said, hey, the moon in yourself is sensation, right? The need to actually create that link between the sensation in the body and your active presence, that need, there's several reasons why it's a good idea. One of the things is that we get into this situation where we do not quite know whether an experience we are having is real or just my imagination has caught fire. That happens, right? There's a litmus test. If I can sense my body, it's real. It doesn't matter if I'm seeing angels dancing around the room. If I can sense my body, it's real. Because a connection is made from the mind to the body, and that's without doubt. So I was taught this preparation of morning 20 minutes, and the idea was that then I would feed moon in myself and not that moon, right? Because I was taking the energy, that energy is the energy of false personality. I'm taking that energy and using it. We're also given the idea in the work that essence needs to feed on personality.
Yes.
Yes. Well, essence is at hydrogen 24 and personality hydrogen 96. So that's the combination, and it's making the same. It's the same thing. Essence feeding on personality is the same kind of action as the body, as your presence sensing your body. You know, we all have taboos about the body, which is part of our culture, but there probably isn't a culture where we wouldn't have that. We have to throw those away and just acknowledge that we have this body and we will sense it.
Yes.
You know, and suffer that, you know, I mean, that's the thing, just suffer that. So this is difficult because most of this, you really have to do it. You start to understand it by doing it. You know, we can talk about it as theory as much as we want, but by doing it, it makes a difference. You suddenly see, oh yeah, this is what's going on.
You know, we are at the conclusion of our time, and it has just been an incredible blessing to have your transmission, I'll use that word, to us and with us. Would you care to say a closing word before we close with prayer?
Oh, I think yes, I would like to. I mean, one of the things that impressed me very much today, and maybe even contributed to whether I gave a poor or good presentation, was the beginning. I thought it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that, you know, the effort, because these are difficult circumstances, the effort that's, in my opinion, was successful with me at least, to raise my level that you began this with, I think that's wonderful. I think what you people do is exemplary.
Well, thank you. It was exemplary that you were with us, and I hope you will consider coming back again. So thank you. And we do close in prayer with the affirmation and invitation to pray aloud, wherever we are, the prayer of God's love. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, as we stay awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.
Amen.
And Marianne?
Yes.
It just occurs to me that if someone wishes to connect further with Robin, we can provide that information if Robin would agree to that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm quite happy if anyone wants to connect. Also, I am at the moment doing various presentations on the hydrogens that are on YouTube. If anybody wants to watch, I'll send you the links if you want. Those people who are addicted to pretty diagrams might enjoy it. And
well, if you send me the links, Robin, I will pass them on to everyone.
Wonderful stuff. So yes. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, thank you.